You're doing all the right things, like eating clean and staying active, but nearly all of us are still missing a key piece, minerals. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's not getting, supporting mood, energy, immunity, and nervous system balance. It's made from ionic trace minerals your body actually absorbs and comes in three delicious flavors, blue raspberry, blue Hawaiian, and blue acai. Because your body can't make minerals, and modern food and water don't supply enough, start with minerals. Start with Concentrace. Find it now at tracemineralz.com.
Okay. Every step.
Hey there, Beverly Hills 90210 fans.
You know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop.
That's interesting.
What?
Yes.
If you were Donna, what would you have said?
A waitress rather call the police. And she was mistaken 90210 for
cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
But look at that Dean Cake. And Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here.
Oh, at least there's one person on this Fricata set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him, and I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here!
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your takeaway.
So sit back and relax, because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Okay, Brian and Chuck, we are here live back on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Chuck, how is everything going in your neck of the woods in the Venice area?
Sun is shining.
That's a good start.
I've had to grapple with some health issues, like I know many of you have, and I'm doing that, starting that right now, and it's all sunny right now. They're all good news right now. So, rather than any kind of jinxing and specificity, it's just all right. Good that way.
That's good to hear. Brian, how's everything on your end? How's Reddit? Are you keeping control of everybody there?
I didn't make the announcement last show, but, we recently hit 12K, which, that's always a cause for celebration every time we move up. Sunny skies over here too. I'm so glad it's finally starting to look like spring, at least a little bit.
Yeah,
some intermittent rain, but yeah, sunny skies over here too.
Really excited about this week. Chuck, I don't know if you want to talk about what we're trying to pull off next week with for a certain group of fans. Do you want to talk about that? Or
I think we should get it. Yeah, I mean,
let's
make
it official maybe before we try to do that, right?
Yeah, I think let's go down the road a little bit and do it.
We'll drive down the road. All right,
it's a little closer. Right now, we'll just, as they say, in the old country, we'll just cavil about it if we pull it off. Yeah,
it's going to be good if it happens. All right, I'm going to play an ad, and then we're going to bring back Kathy, who's joining us, and also Ken Stringer, who we're really excited to have. Well, both of them we're excited to have. So here we go.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. Check out all the latest rad stuff from the Beverly Hills 90210 show shop. They have everything you could possibly imagine. So, go there now, okay?
Okay, so we have some more people joining us here right now. First, I'm going to start with Kathy Podwell. Did I say that right? Yes.
You did. Very good.
Amazing. Very I like good. When I get it right. Yeah. Oh, my God. You were Ginger in this episode. And before we came on, I was just telling you and everybody how amazing you are in this. You're still so stunning. And I'm so great that you're glad that you joined us here.
So happy. Thank you guys, all of you, for having me. I'm so excited. I had the best time on this show, so I'm happy to talk about my experience for sure.
Yeah, great, great.
And then also joining us here is Ken Stringer, who we've wanted on this podcast for a very long time. Ken was a writer, a first AD. Ken, whenever you hear the term double ups, you might as well just call it the Ken Stringer ups.
Because he was the czar. He was the czar of the double ups. Yeah. At least I remember. Now, just with double ups, here we are, before we go back. Let me just ask one question about double ups. How long did you have to do? Did this show do double ups? Did it do them in like season 9? Were they doing double ups or no?
Well,
when did it become a normal?
Season 9 was my last season. But I think we started with the college years, didn't we? Season 4? Because when did they,
Right, right. We expanded it. We expanded it in both because of the summer episodes. In putting them in, we expanded it to 28, 29 hours.
Yeah.
But, we all went really nuts in the college years and went to these double up things.
Yeah.
That really impacted. I had 2 seasons, 4 and 5.
Right.
And that was that. And I know that we, they were both about the same number, I think, 32 hours,
33, rings a bell.
4 hours, that like that. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a lot of episodes.
A lot of episodes.
Do you know it's like there's like maybe 6 to 10 now in the show.
And some of that is a stretch. Have you? This is just apropos of nothing, but Kathy, you may have been just, or any of you, just curious, just to a little veer. Did any of you try to watch Feud, The Swans? Watch any of that?
I'm trying to get into it. I haven't fully.
It is so padded, and I got lost so much interest that I went back and I bought the source book because I really was interested in the characters and the subject matter. The amount of story that they had to tell was, like you said, 6 hours. They do a series. This one should, like, a good 2-hour movie would have been 2.5-hour movie would have been just. A little old school, but it would have been just perfect, kind of.
So is it you're talking about?
This series that's on FX and Hulu about Truman Capote and all the with all the actresses. He's got, Naomi Watts is Babe Paley and a lot of other Diane Lane,
it's gonna be good.
It just became so repetitive. As they just pushed padding. Anyway.
Yeah.
I want to start with Ken here because Chuck was just saying you were in the show from day one. So what was your role in the early parts of the show?
I was hired as a first AD, and production manager that first season, John Liberti, I worked with him the previous season on another Fox show called Alien Nation. Which after one season got canceled, Barry Diller pulled the plug for whatever reason.
Yeah, I saw that credit, and I just want to speak up. Let me interrupt. Anybody who does not know Alienation, find it. It was a really interesting show, so far ahead of its time. Would have given, and I was a story editor level writer at the time that and would have taken jobs like that, and I would have worked on that one for sure as a story writer. Loved the great show.
It's a great tough show also, and we used to shoot downtown in this old brick building that they had used for Cagney and Lacey, and it was really a ramshackle thing, much more ramshackle than Van Nuys. Van Nuys was a palace compared to this place.
Right.
Just an aside, we shot, for the fans out there, we shot the show in adapted warehouses in Van Nuys, 90210.
Right.
And I had also written a spec script for Alienation at the end of the season, hoping it would, catch on. And I got a call back from the showrunner. He was very positive and supportive. But then, like, the next week.
was that Ken Johnson?
Ken Johnson, exactly.
Yeah. And, never got a chance to meet him.
He was a nice guy.
Yeah.
And so anyway, what was the question I'm answering? Oh, what was my role on 90210? Well, I was a first AD. And so for people who may or may not know, when you're on a TV series, it's usually the case that you hire 2 first ADs. One will shoot with the director for, in our case, 7 days. And during those 7 days, the other AD and the upcoming director will prepare the next episode. And then when the first episode is done shooting, you take the stage and you shoot yours, and they, you go back and forth like that. So Brad Gross was the other AD. He was started with number one. So I started with number two. It was called Green Room. Don't ask me anything about it. It was a now something always confused me about that first season, Chuck. There was some sort of Swedish outfit involved, even though Aaron was overseeing everything, I guess. I don't remember.
Propaganda.
Propaganda, that's right.
It was, it was a non-union It was a non-union television show.
Right.
Which is why I was the executive producer and they weren't.
Oh, I see. Okay, so, okay, I get it.
I was hired because it was a non-union show.
Right.
And the only way they could get it going was with a non-union contract with Fox.
But obviously they had a contract with the DGA because that's what I was a member of, as well as the director.
And the Writers Guild, you know, my union. Yeah, no, they SAG, of course. But the but they didn't have to do IATSE. They didn't want to do IATSE. They were naive in thinking that they would ultimately get around that. But they wanted, but they thought it would be worth a try at that moment.
Right. So we did. We did.
Not that I endorsed it, but they were the ones that, and because it was a non-union show, was one of the reasons that I got hired. Because anybody who, if you would have had a credit at that point as a showrunner, why would you? And you had worked with a, you know, a top-rate Hollywood crew. Why would you want to do? As what I used to call the first crew, and I like some of the people a real lot, but I can once in a while I think of them, it was a glorified AFI crew. Because I produced some movies for the AFI when I got out of college. You know, I remember what that crew was like, and it wasn't that much different than our.
First I remember the first camera operator we had that season. He always used a tripod for when we were on the camera on tripods or on the dolly rather than the wheels because he just wasn't experienced enough with it. But anyway, after I think about season three, we went union.
After the first 2 years, the season three was our union year.
Yeah, that's when Rick Gunter came aboard, who was a very nice guy.
Very nice.
So I don't want to ramble on here.
Now, how did you get to this? Let's get to this episode though. So, how did you become the writer of this episode? There's a lot of moving parts here. Jason's going to direct this episode. Right. So talk to me about coming into this. Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned, I had written the spec script for Alien Nation. I was working on that show as a first AD, which was something I'd wanted to have been a writer ever since I was in junior high school. And so when I would land on a show, the toughest thing to do if you have a spec script for, you know, just sending it over the transom is to get somebody to read it.
Right.
I was already working on a show as a first AD. Generally, the producers were, as a courtesy, if nothing else, but they'd read it. And so I did this, and usually it didn't work out. But when I got on 90210 during the hiatus after the first season, I wrote a spec script. And I, you know, gave it to Chuck, and he was very generous. He was very complimentary and says, you know, we're going to do this. And what it was, though, was it was sort of a Peggy Sue Got Married in reverse story, where the girls, Brenda and Kelly and Donna, were like hostessing a 25-year reunion from the class of what would have been 68 or something. And then at some point, Brenda goes unconscious. She trips over a cable or something. When she wakes up, they're at their own 25-year reunion. Anyway, so I thought I had a lot of fun writing it. But what I didn't know was that the first season, it was understood, at least it was understood by me, that that Brenda and Brandon had transferred to West Beverly High were juniors. And although I don't know that it was ever overtly stated in any of the episodes. So during the hiatus, I wrote it with that in mind, that they would become seniors with season two. But unbeknownst to me, because the show became so hot, you know, I hit that trigger point of the teen zeitgeist or something. And I guess Fox and Spelling and everybody else wanted to, you know.
Well, they were supposed to be sophomores.
I'm sorry?
It was my blunder. They were supposed to be sophomores, but maybe we were in the second or third episode. And Jason just looks over to me and says, guys, man, make us juniors. Do I really look like a sophomore? Come on. And nobody, we weren't going past 12. We're not even going far. How, the show wasn't going to be that. I said, okay, fine. And then I had to, and then I was vilified of being, you know, like this dumbass by just, you know, not ignoring it. But what was a mother to do? You know,
I mean, I don't think the audience had any clue. In any case,
don't work on the
no, but yeah, but who knew? They, well, this audience has lots of clues about it.
That's
knows so much more. It always is one of the major critics of the U.S. right now. I mean, the first we came to my class when I was teaching UCLA, Alan Sepinwall. And the first thing was, how come they were having to repeat the years? You know, it's we caught you.
Well, then they knew more than I figured. But I didn't know when I was writing the script during hiatus, and I wrote it with the presumption that they were the second season, they were going to be seniors. And that this episode, as you pointed out to me when you read the script, it was really a show designed for their senior year, you know, at the 25-year reunion and so forth. And you said, well, we'll do it the next year. Well, as as happens, of course, storylines change, character relationships change and all that. And by the time next year rolled around.
Yeah, but you showed, you know, the thing was, is clearly, you know, when you're in a situation like that and it's a really, you know, a tough one, as you all can imagine, you know, because you really worried when I was surprised. I was so, yeah, because it was you, I'd be so open to, sure, I'm going to read it. But I was trained, like, don't take any spec scripts. Don't, if something comes through the mail, just send it back, because I'm theoretically putting the company at risk.
Right.
But that was not going to be the thing with it. And, you know, it showed, obviously, even though I don't certainly remember the details as you described, you know, as you describe it, well, you know, you had a lot of imagination. You knew the show. And Bradley had started already to direct some, and that's what he wanted to do. So it was a great pleasure. And like Pete is saying, it really holds up. This was one, you know, it's interesting. And let me just put you in the loop here, Kathy. We, this part of this, because I went back to look at this part, these episodes and the numbers of them. And we had 6 episodes that you would call the graduation episodes. You know, and we actually had 6 summer episodes. This is the summer they went to Paris and all of that business.
Right.
But this was these, you know, 6 episodes. Started with the senior Paul one.
Right.
Which Chip wrote. And then, you know, right after that came this one. And then right after that came the 2 episodes with prom and Donna Martin graduates.
Right.
And then after that came Karen and I, which was all Steve Wasserman and Jessica Klein. And, it, you know, completely, you know, those 2 episodes. And Karen and I were commencement.
Right.
So this episode was really like slotted in, kind of based on the notion that you ditch. Our ditch days when we were at Beverly Hills High School is we went to the beach, but it was, you know, it was fun to, but I forget how all the elements came together, but I know that we wanted to get that came through the bathroom window, and we needed a star, and we were lucky.
You all listening to this album, were you, and by the Beatles, and said this is our motivation.
We wanted it to be zany a little bit. We wanted it to be fun, and we wanted it. Now, Ken, did you go on set too? Were you on set, or were you
another
show?
If I may. Yeah. So because we were shelving the, you know, Peggy Sue Got Married idea that I had, but Chuck, you were true to your promise. You gave me a different writing episode, assignment rather, and it was, like you say, it's for Ditch Day. So, unbeknownst to you, I don't think I ever told you this, and. So when I was on, when I just got the assignment, I was working on this set, and Steve Wasserman came down to the set, pulled me aside at lunch hour, and said, you know, make this like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It wasn't like he was suggesting it. He was like telling me. And he said, go rent the tape and, you know, get that kind of rhythm. We want it to be different. So I did that, and then I turned the outlight in, and then you called me into your office, and you basically chewed me out because it wasn't a quote 90210. And of course it wasn't, it had different vibe and rhythms and so forth. And I chose at that moment not to tell you that it was Steve's idea because I didn't want to, if I'd be more politic, I shouldn't throw something in there that might cause friction, you know. Now maybe he told you himself at some point, I don't know. But
Anyway,
that's when you came up with the idea. I remember you told me you were in the bathtub when you had the idea about the bathroom, bathroom window thing.
No, I forgot. No, you know, this is one, you know, either while you, when you were shooting this or when you were prepping it, one to the other is when Karen and I ran down to Jamaica.
Oh.
And we had like 6 days in Jamaica, 5 nights in Jamaica. And it was just great. Six, maybe, I think it was. And then came back and, you know, was involved with the production of the two Donna Martin episodes and us writing commencement, which, you know, Kathy was like a clip show. We thought, you know, we was the best of.
Chuck loves the clip show.
And I love the clip shows. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I definitely felt that vibe of the Ferris Buellers. So that worked because when I watched this with Chuck, I was going to say, this kind of reminds me of Ferris Bueller's Day Off in a way.
Well, the first iteration was Uber Ferris Bueller. Magic Mountain was in there in both ones, but I don't remember if the bacteria scene was in there or not. But,
well, I love everything with the roller coaster, and in fact, I wanna show it. Really, this is really a tribute to you guys, and let me get this here. I'm going to pull off so I can read this. You can hear me, right?
Yeah.
I noticed, I wanted to read about it, and I noticed, two people gave reviews. And here's somebody, what somebody said in June of 2015. This is your territory here, Brian, I know, but June 2015. The one with Senior Ditch Day. I really enjoyed this episode. It's funny, and I got super irritated with the girl who conned Brandon and Steve. Such a crappy move. In this episode, it's Senior Ditch Day, and everyone's going to Magic Mountain. Well, almost everyone. Brandon gets stuck running the Peach Pit after Nat calls in sick. But a girl with a tour group and nothing book, and where she's lost money, makes the day very frustrating. Dylan and Steve tried to find Burt Reynolds because that's what the tour group was promised. But then it turns out the girl was a con artist and got away. How unfair is that? Overall, I give the episode a 9 out of 10, which in my ratings book is amazing.
Wow. I'll put that on my epitaph now.
I thought I would share that. I'll send that to you. I thought I would share that with you. I think it was. You know, this is one, and then I'll shut up here. You know, really in my experience of doing the podcast, this was one of the episodes I just wouldn't be thinking of this episode. You know, I had done, you remember that Ken, you were not the AD on the Little League episode, right? The little base.
No, that was when it rained the whole week.
Yeah, they had to go out there. And Bert did not know how to shoot baseball. And he promised me he did, and he didn't. And it was really not that was a tough one in post. But you know, that one was all me. And so, you know, the thing was, is that this is just one I had not thought of. And so if I'm not thinking of it, it must not have been that good, but it was so much fun.
And
getting in the commercial. Now refresh everybody, or tell anybody who hasn't seen it yet, be a spoiler here. What were you guys doing? How did you get in that commercial? How did that happen? That was great.
Let me hand it over to Kathy in a second, but just to set it up quickly, the part of the thing was there was a celebrity group, tour group that was booked into the Peach Pit to start off with, and they were going to meet Burt Reynolds, and, you know, it was a celebrity thing. And it was really all a con on Kathy's part. And so Steve and Dylan got roped into helping her try to track down Burt Reynolds. Steve claimed that Burt Reynolds was a friend, that he'd met him and so forth and so on, you know, the way Steve would.
Right.
And finally he got a tip that while he was on a certain stage shooting a commercial, or no, shooting something, but there was also a commercial being shot there, a toothpaste commercial. So in order to sneak in and try to get to Burt, they dressed up, you know, they went to the where the extras were getting dressed, and they acted like extras, and they got entry into the stage. The three of them, four, yeah, Steve, yeah. And you, Kevin. Yeah. Jason, you're right. I mean, you're right. Jason was the director, his first one. And so they'd be brushing away. They had mops and buckets of plaque that they were painting the teeth with. And then at a certain point, we had an off-camera prop person with a fire hose, like it was mouthwash.
Yes.
You know, cleaning him up. And like I said before, Dylan was swinging on the uvula. And yeah, it was zany. In fact, Chuck, I remember you telling me you had to talk the network into not cutting it from the script. But I'm glad they didn't, because Kathy loved it.
I loved it.
Over to you, Kathy. How did you get into this episode? Did you have to audition? What was the whole process like for you?
That's kind of the interesting part. So I had taken a year off. I gave birth. My son was a year old. I got a call from my agent at the time who said I got just a request to come and audition from Diane Young, I believe.
Was the cast. Oh, yeah.
So Diane had cast me. I did, a few years before, 2 episodes of Growing Pains. And she had cast me in that. And so she was calling. She was asking for me. And she told my agents that she remembered that I was very well-liked and easygoing on Growing Pains. And because it was Jason's first directing, you know, his directorial debut, he wanted it to be like no divas, the nicest possible, you know, actors possible. And so how great is that to like get a call?
Yes.
As an actress, to get a call, they want you to come in, and B, that's the reason. So I was like, okay, the only problem was trying to figure out who to watch my kid, but I got a friend to watch the baby. That was great. And I think I came in and I read for Diane, or maybe I think I just read for her and Luke, right? Jason. Right away. And I think that was it. Yeah, I don't think it was a long process.
Right.
Unless you guys remember, I don't think I tested or anything like that. It was just...
No, they probably knew they wanted you and that... You it all checked out when you got there.
I think
just speaking as an AD for a second, I recall you as being extremely professional, always there in good spirits, and you know, well prepped. You knew your lines, and not every actor on that show always knew their lines.
That's fine. Anyway,
it was a lot of fun to work with you too.
Good. Well, that's good. Yeah.
And I have to say, you look pretty much the same.
You get to this show. I mean, like Chuck alluded, I mean, this is the 6 big episodes of that season. The show is huge. It's the biggest show for my generation. So was that intimidating? What was that like to walk into the universe? I mean, you did Growing Pains, which is a super popular show for sure. I'm not denying that, but this is a whole other level of...
Well, I was sort of experienced with that walking onto a... I mean, every show I worked on was already a hit, pretty much. I worked on Dallas.
Yeah.
And when I came on to that show, it was the same situation. Like, it was this, you know, iconic show with these iconic characters that the whole world knew who JR was. And all my scenes at the beginning were with Larry Hagman. And it was just supposed to be 7 episodes. And it blossomed into a 3-year gig, 3-season gig. So, but that experience was amazing. Intimidating, same thing, sort of intimidating. But when the actors on set, these beloved people, embrace you as a fellow actor and bring you into the family fold, which is exactly what happened with the guys on 90210. Amazing.
Yeah, well, you got to work with the guys.
I got to work with all the guys. I mean, at the end, I got to work with some of the girls. But they were so kind to me. So there was no time to feel intimidated, because they were just like completely welcoming.
Asking about what Ken was talking about, that scene with the mouthwash.
Yeah.
Tell me about shooting that.
So, and you, Ken and Chucky, you guys can maybe remember this. So it was, we shot it. It was hilarious. I just remember we had the best time. Oh, here we go.
Yeah, I'm just playing it in the background. Yeah, no audio here.
We had the best time. But after we finished our week of filming, we got called back. Something happened to this footage, so we had to reshoot this. So I came back the following week, and I remember that because I was like, oh, hello, my friend. Can you watch my son for another week? And we had to reshoot this. So how funny is that?
Well, I don't recall that at all.
No,
that is that's something I think I would. Possibly that's true, and maybe they got it through and just did it. But that's something that I think I would have recalled. I think I was in Jamaica when they reshot this because reshooting was a big effing deal that we very rarely did, and we kind of prided ourselves on the fact we didn't do hardly any reshoots. I made Luke do one reshoot when he ad-libbed William Shakespeare in It's a Totally Happening Life. And I just said, you can ad-lib me, but you can't do that to Shakespeare. That's the only time. That's not true. We did it with Brenda too. We shot her wardrobe things with the Peach Pit. That was it. That's the only time we ever broke continuity. So, but we must have. Look at.
Another
but you know, Ken, this also was a really an inexpensive episode. Even for 90210, it was an inexpensive episode.
Oh, that's interesting. Even with Bert.
So probably to reshoot it was within the budget. Didn't even make it go over budget.
I'm surprised to hear that, you know, with the Six Flags and Bert. And also, we need to get to the how Little Richard got into the mix.
No, he wasn't in that one.
No.
That was a different episode altogether.
It was Burt Reynolds. Wish. In fact, originally we tried to get Burt Reynolds in one episode. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, just we tried originally to get Arnold Schwarzenegger, but he wasn't available. And then I guess Aaron, you know, you get a call from Aaron asking you something. I guess in most cases you say, fine, thank you, I'll be there. And that's what happened with Burt, I think.
Well, Kathy, what was Burt like?
I didn't know anybody in Hollywood. I wouldn't have known anyone in that ilk, you know. Yeah.
What was Burt like?
Hold on, wasn't there an episode where Little Richard was almost on as a cameo?
Yes, but it's the wrong one. It was the Rolling Stones one. That's always my bad. Oh, okay. You read bad intel, and I'm sorry to all 90210 super fans who might have believed that too. My error.
Okay, let it go.
But that was an embarrassing footage to be cutting out, but anyway, we had to.
Oh, well, one day we'll get to that with Ken and all that.
Question, Peter, Burt was amazing. I mean, he literally came in, did his thing, and he left. But yeah, he was very sweet, very, very sweet.
Yeah, it was right at the end. He was on some other show regularly, and it was like at the end of the day, he came in and he had an entourage. Yeah. And he came in the door. All the extras in there were mostly female for this shot anyway. And they were just, you know, they couldn't contain themselves. I couldn't get the set quiet to roll the camera, and it really didn't matter.
Yeah, Ken, I remember that. I was on the set for that. Aaron asked me to make sure that I'd be on the set for Burt because he asked to be there just as a sign of respect to walk up and greet him, which I'm happy to do. And he was, I remember Doug McClure, the actor, was with him as well. Cool. I was probably more excited to see Doug McClure because he was, I think, a TV Western star, all like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. In you know, that era, like me being a young fan of those kind of Westerns.
For Kathy and Ken, I'm going to ask Kathy first. You worked with Jason. This is his first episode that he's directing, and he's also acting, which is a challenge because he is all over the episode, too. What was he like as a director? What was it like to be a part of that experience?
It's been a minute, few years, but my overall feeling is he was a gentleman and a doll and kind. I don't ever remember feeling awkward. Either we just shot and he liked what I was doing, or he, you know, would say, you know, tweak it here or there. I don't remember it being like, he was great. He was really great.
Yeah. What about for you, Ken? You know, you wrote this, and now you're also the first AD on this too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. And I was told when we were prepping that there was some concern expressed that being the AD on the set with Jason and also being the writer, that I might, you know, inject myself too much, looking over his shoulder and saying, "No, Jason, you should shoot it this way or that way." But mm-hmm. you know, I was professional enough not to do that as an AD. So.
Wait a second. Who told you that?
Who?
Is that another Wasserman conversation?
Oh, boy. Well,
the guy who told me that was James Wetherill. He came out of Paul's office, and they said they just had a meeting with somebody. I thought it might have been you, but maybe it was somebody else. That there's, well, we just want to make sure Ken doesn't, you know, overstep his bounds, as it were. And then Jim came into my office and says, I told him they don't need to worry about it. And it didn't. So,
That sounds like Pete. That sounds like a Gail Patterson to me. I'm sorry. Or even Duke. I disavow that.
Okay. I didn't know who it was. They just said, you know, the other side of the hill or something like that.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the other side of the hill is either Aaron or me. So,
you were on the other side. Dave. You were on
No, it ain't me, babe. You're looking for, babe.
You're hoping you wouldn't remember anything.
I'm just like,
the only a while. Haven't been much singing going on, but there's some.
I just feel like that's a new T-shirt for our store. That Chuck Rosen's on the other side of the hill. Like I think that's a.
Oh, that's shirt. When I turned 40. I turned 40 while I was doing the show, and Paul Wagner's note to me was, "Welcome to my side of the hill." So I thought that was pretty creative.
Very creative. Yeah. So go ahead, about Jason. Yeah.
There were only two times I remember where I injected myself. It was really, I was injecting myself as an AD, not as a writer. There was one day we were on exterior location all day, and it was in the winter time, or, you know, February or something like that, and the days were short. And we were doing a lot of driving shots, you know, with a tow car, and not to get too far into the weeds, but the tow bar broke. So we had to go somewhere and took an hour and a half or something to get a new one. And anyway, for whatever reason, we got behind. Like I said, we were losing the light. And there was this shot that Jason wanted to do very badly. I don't recall what it was. And I didn't think he needed it, you know, to cut the film together. And we had a little argument about it, a nice friendly argument. I said, "No, I need it, Ken. You know, I really want this." I said, "I know, but we got to make the day. You know, you're going to leave out this important shot." And so he agreed, and we did it that way. And later on, a few days later, he came up to see, said, "Well, you were right, Ken. I didn't need that shot." So I felt vindicated. The other time was this bacteria thing you're mentioning, Kathy.
Yeah.
He never shot a wide shot that included both the mouth and the camera crew. He just had he just shot onto the mouth and then a reversal onto the camera crew. And I thought he needed that shot. Now, I don't know if that has anything to do with the reshoot or not.
That sounds like it. That sounds like you needed one more shot.
Yeah, but they'd have to bring back, you know, everything, a grew.
Did that make the final cut, the wide shot with everything?
No.
No, there was no wide shot, I don't think. Well, maybe there was. I don't remember it that well. But I don't think there ever was.
No, I don't think so.
I don't recall seeing it.
Yeah. But he was very, you know, Jason is a very confident fellow and very savvy. You know, it wasn't his, you know, even though it was his first directing gig, you know, it wasn't his first rodeo, as it were. And he was great. And
I never would have guessed it was his first. I remember feeling that way, that I never have guessed it was his first directing job. Yeah.
Kathy, how did you create this Ginger? I mean, she's got multiple names. I'm going to stick with Ginger. How did you create Ginger? Was there some part of you that always wanted to run a scam like this? I mean,
how fine is that? I know, and playing that where you know who you are, nobody else knows who you are. There's just this fine line. I remember, like, okay, tread lightly here. Don't give away too much here. Try to act sincere here. So I'm happy you liked it, really, honestly. It was just so much fun.
There's also, you talked about, Ken, these scenes where we're racing the car, and this is sort of out of the 90210 universe. We don't usually see car chases and all this kind of stuff. Talk to me about adding that and writing that in. Was it a reference? Someone asked a question on Reddit. Was it a reference to the Smokey and the Bandits?
Oh, God, no. I don't even remember doing drive-bys or things like that. I just remember doing toe shots.
Well, we did some 70s. It had a 70s feel to it, Ken. You know, the one thing about this episode that is different than every other episode we did, this is the only episode that ends on a freeze frame. And that is such a 70s aesthetic that it had to be part of the mindset. Maybe we didn't have a good end. Maybe the editors didn't think we had a good out. I forget who cut this one. Yeah. But
it must have been on the three guys, one head above the other, looking around the door jamb. Is that
you would think it wasn't? It was so that it was that shot, and then
kind of thing. Yeah,
where's the keys, and ends on them feeling for their keys because she
We could have found a better probably freeze frame, but you know but I love that. That's one of the you know, you hear that term a lot, you know, the iconic shot, the iconic myth, for all sorts of things. But that's one because it made it into title sequences almost immediately. You know, it was a cute shot of those guys, you know.
Yeah.
They were having fun shooting it, no question.
Yeah. Well, that would be a good shot for that purpose.
Yeah.
What do you remember about shooting at Magic Mountain, Ken?
Well, the main thing I remember is, you know, it was written in the script that Gabrielle, who played the character Andrea, was deathly afraid of riding the roller coaster, the one that does the revolutions and stuff, especially. And that was part of the script. And in real life, it turns out Gabrielle was terrified about doing that. And my God, what a game girl. She was another one who was very professional, always prepared, and even though she was terrified, boy. So she got on that roller coaster. Of course, we had cameras mounted on the front of the roller coaster aiming back at her and a few extras behind her. And, you know, God forbid that camera should come loose, you know. And I think we tested it once, you know, without anybody on the roller coaster and tightened everything down. So there would be that fear, too, if I were the actor there, not just for the roller coaster ride itself, but some piece of equipment.
Believe me, Ken, she's only thinking about the roller coaster. I know, Gabrielle, that's what she was thinking about. But it's pretty amazing because that was Viper? I mean, that was a major ride. That was, I don't think I ever was on. I was on a few roller coasters in my life. Something
called the Colossus, which was a more traditional architecture, but big.
And yeah.
It was called the Viper. And, I was not being a lover of roller coasters myself.
Me either.
I sympathized with her. And
well, it was good production. It gave the episode a little production, so that was good.
Yeah. Like right off the bat, you see the roller coaster, you know, right from the first shot of this episode.
That's right.
Yeah.
That thing announced.
Was that something that you wrote in?
Yes. Yeah, I started with a black screen. I'm not sure if they edited it that way. And a voiceover from David, who was... We had this little booth in the school itself along the hallway with a window in it where David and Donna did sort of a, you know, local radio show about the doings in and around the school. And they were promoting the Ditch Day, get your tickets, blah, blah, blah. And then so during the voiceover, then the screen, the black disappears and you're on the front of the roller coaster in the middle of it. Anyway, it's a POV going up. You know, and getting right up to the peak, you know, and let's get back up to the peak. Then we cut to David with the rest of his spiel.
Yeah.
So, yes, it was a callback to that, yes.
It's really great. Okay, some comments are being thrown here. These episodes are amazing. It really feels like they're actually graduating, watching it carefree and excited for the future. Kathy, what about, you did a lot of work with Ian here as well. What was Ian like to work with?
A sweetheart. I'm like, honestly, so, so sweet. Everybody. It was great. Luke was a doll. I've said this before, but he and I were talking, and he was about to shoot 7 seconds, the movie.
8 seconds, I think.
Or eight?
Okay. I don't know.
Eight seconds.
Okay.
And he said that, oh shoot, you know, because we got along, and he was like, yeah, they just cast my wife last week. You would have been perfect for it, kind of thing. And I was like, oh, you know. But yeah, so he was so sweet, and I'm adorable.
Had you seen 90210? Like, had you watched it prior to your visit?
Not really. I'm like notorious for walking onto a set. I had never watched Growing Pains. I had never watched Dallas. So I was.
Well, it was, you know, because it was already in the graduation flow. And the zany nature of it, and that, you know, the focus being, you know, you could say the narrative in some ways was guest star driven. You know, it's a very unique 90210 episode, and would become more unique as we moved into college, where life was more seemed to feel like it was more serialized.
Ken, I love the dialogue with Andrea and Donna when they're talking about the, you know, the sex and virginity and the analogy to the roller coaster. Talk to me about writing that. Were you given any notes or thoughts on that part of it?
I cannot lie. I did not write that scene. It was somebody else inserted. And so I can't take credit there.
Was it Jessica that wrote that?
I don't know who wrote it.
Good. It's really great stuff there. Someone's pointing out that the director actress played Rosie is also Emily's best friend in San Francisco later on. So
yeah,
that's
yeah.
We loved that little reference.
You pointed out we did the Patreon, right? You tell people about that, right? We always do the watch alongs.
Yes, in the watch along, we pointed that out. Well, I want to ask this though, Kathy. You were around the girls as well.
Yeah.
And then you just did their podcast. You did their podcast, right? Tori and Jenny's. What was the inner, and you know, it's no secret that Shannon was in a lot was being talked about at that time. Did you experience anything like that? What were the girls like?
I did not, but it's interesting. I remember hearing about it, and that's the thing. Did I watch the show? No. But how could you not know who everyone was? They were all over, right? So I knew, just like Dallas, I knew who all the characters for the most part were, even though I wasn't, you know, hadn't been watching. So the girls, yeah, that was like the one thing I heard. But again,
you didn't have any scenes with them.
What?
You didn't have any scenes with them.
Just at the end, at the Peach Pit, before I go out.
They were at Magic Mountain. Well, you were, you know, going around.
Believe me, that Peach Pit scene, at least, you know, I would say if I'm any of those three actresses, I could see looking at their watch, like, okay, that's because they weren't important in those scenes. They just happened to have to be in them, you know. Right. So,
no, but they were lovely, honestly.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think they're good. That's nice to hear. Yeah.
Yeah.
This goes back to a question you asked a little while ago, Peter. About Jason directing it and also being, you know, an actor in the show.
Yes. Obviously.
So with a show like that, when you have a cast member who's directing also, you try to write it, and this one was written this way, so that actor spends most, if not all, of the episode in one set. So you can shoot all of his scenes in one day. And he couldn't, which we did in the Peach Pit. Since he was stuck in the Peach Pit because Nat was sick, I think.
Right.
And this tour was coming, and, you know, So that's the way that was done. That's the way it's usually done.
Oh, wait, you did a setup with him, got all of his setups out of the way?
All of his scenes, yeah.
Yeah, great.
As I recall, all of them. Maybe there's one exception. Maybe the one.
Right, whatever.
Yeah, maybe. I think the one with Burt Reynolds was at the end.
Maybe. Yeah, that's right.
I feel like that was sort of the last thing.
Yeah, it was. I think it was the end of the day, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was unusual to have, you know, we proportioned out our extras. And, you know, you could see more and more. Certainly the Donna Martin episodes, prom, there were more episodes than usual. And commencement had, you know, double it because it was a two-hour one. But this had the interesting to have all those extras held in the peach pit. That was, you know, we usually didn't have that. We had a couple there. You turn it around. There wouldn't really be that many people there. There were a lot of people there.
It was really crowded.
Yeah, it was.
a lot of giggling going on.
You also mentioned that Magic Mountain was shut down for the day, and those are all extras, and you guys took over Magic Mountain. I think that was a question that someone asked, right?
Somebody asked it on Reddit, yeah.
I'm sure they were closed. I had shot at Magic Mountain two or three times before on other shows, like TJ Hooker and something else. So I knew that's why I wrote it into the episode, because I was pretty sure it would be available. And of course, the location manager verifies it, and what day will they be closed? And that's when we schedule it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, I don't recall that like they shut down for us. They were shut down anyway, I think.
Right. We wouldn't want to have any really. It's hard to do that. You know, we had that. Like for instance, when we in season five, when we shot at the Rose Bowl with the Voodoo Lounge tour. And you have to, you know, everybody coming in has to be told you're going to be on camera and all of that. It just adds another whole layer of potential, you know, mistake.
Yeah.
Problem.
Yeah.
What I love about your performance, Kathy, is that sometimes when guest stars come on to 90210, there's, you know, they have to fit in to the universe, but you hold your own in the universe. Like, you bring them to you. Like, we're all hooked on what you, even though it's comedy and we're laughing about what, you know, what everything that's going on, you bring everybody to your level and what you're doing. And I think it's a really hard role to play in the world of 90210. So it's a testament to your ability as an actor.
Thank you. I mean, I felt like there was no competition, or there was no, you know, it was a standalone part. I wasn't playing a high school character. You know, I did feel, even though I was not that much older, I was about the same age as everyone. I was playing an older character.
Yes.
And she was standalone and unique. And I kind of knew, even though I hadn't watched the show, I kind of knew that this was not the typical 90210 episode. I mean, you know, and prior to that, I would have been cast as the high school kid. So for me, it was definitely fun to play a little older and a standalone sort of unique character for sure.
Ken, when we were watching the episode, a question came up about, I guess it's Brian and Ian, big guy, little guy. They're referring to each other as this, hey, big guy, little guy, or whatever. And I think Dylan throws in like medium guy or something like that. Was this something that you wrote in, or is this them ad-libbing?
I have no recollection of that particular dialogue. And it sounds like it might be something they thought up themselves.
Yeah. Chuck's away. Everything's Wasserman's taking over. They're doing reshoots.
It just fit. I'm glad, you know, that we remember it the same way. You know, it just fit in. It was something we wanted to do. Ken went on. You know, I was looking. You know, and I think you should come back, Ken, and sometime with Pete, and go beyond. We only did a couple together, but you stayed with the show for so many years. You did so many different things with it. I'm sure he's interested in hearing about that. I go blurry-eyed after season five. I walked away. Yeah. I was so effing burnt out that that was done. I don't know anything what goes on after that at all. So by that shape and frame, I can't. That we wouldn't have that much to talk about. Although there were some good ones. You did a nice one in season four and a nice one in season five for us as well, as you kept working. Well,
I have to admit, a lot of the episodes, in fact, most of the college ones, I have almost no recollection of.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we have the episodes that we can send you, Ken, so that you can rewatch and get your memories.
That's between you and your maker.
Some of those I do recall just visually feeling.
This was fun getting together and seeing you, Kathy. You know, I don't, again, when an actor like yourself comes on, I get a chance to connect, because if I did part of casting, and on this one I probably wasn't, if you just remember it, Jay, then I probably wasn't in that room. But I'm in that room. Even if I would have been, it would have been hello, goodbye. That would have been it. So to get to see you, and also tell you how much I enjoyed watching you all these years later. Did Pete send you the episode? Did you get to see it?
She didn't need to see it, Kathy said.
I didn't need to see it because this very lovely man created a fan page, and he has posted all of my 90210 scenes. So I went to my own fan page and watched all the scenes.
This is incredible. You're telling me there's a fan of yours that has, I love this, by the way. I love when fans are doing things like this. Mm-hmm. A fan of yours is at this level. It's at this level that he created a fan page where I'm sure there's Dallas, there's the growing pains. It's all of this stuff is what you're saying?
Yeah. So if I ever need to refer to anything, he has made it so wonderfully easy for me to go. So I watched everything last night. So I was like, I'm good. Yeah.
There's a person there's a person that we talk about that's on Reddit who has tracked every episode of this podcast and will say things like, Chuck, when he got a phone call, it was his daughter. You know, this is the kind of level that they're at. This is what's happening.
It's amazing. And my friend, he's now my friend who started this fan page. He's now my dear friend. But he has a memory. He'll talk about, because he was a huge Dallas fan. That's kind of how it started.
So you've met the fan? Have you met the fan?
Oh, I mean, he's a friend now. Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We kind of were like friends, and it morphed into, can I do this fan page? And I'm like, good luck. But he's made it into a real thing. It's crazy. And very, like I said, very convenient for me to just like do my research on what, because he'll tell me about a scene, or he'll talk about, and I have no idea that I was in that scene.
Well, let me ask you about 90210. Do you vividly remember shooting most of this?
I do, and I was thinking that too. Like, he'll talk about Dallas scenes that I have no memory of, but again, that was 3 years, so it all kind of merges. But I can feel sitting there talking to Luke, chatting with Ian. I just have to say, Ian's take, and I don't know if you wrote this, Ken, but as the germs were in the mouth, and he does like a Sammy Davis. Like, hey, I don't know. Do you remember that?
I don't recall that, but that sounds pretty much like
Ian was really, we're in awe. I was in awe even at the time. That man really was a great ad-libber. He did so many funny moments.
That's what I wanted to ask, because I think I thought at the time it was an ad-lib, and I thought it was just genius, but yeah, I wasn't sure if really he wrote it that way, but that was his take on it, and it was so creative.
He was the perfect choice for Sharknado, I think.
Let's watch one Kathy scene here with Ian, since we're talking about all of this.
Look, Steve, I'm really going to level with you now. My name's not Ginger, it's Adrian. I had some trouble back home in Salt Lake, so I came to L.A. You know, fresh city, fresh start, fresh name. One thing led to another, and I got hooked up with Parnell. What's the use? Look, it's a very long, very convoluted story. I didn't want to give that money back till I was absolutely sure we'd exhausted every possible avenue. You gotta believe me, Steve.
And driving to Vegas, how does that fit into your plans?
You panic sometimes.
Well, Adrian, you know what we have to do?
Fly to Vegas? Kidding. Just kidding.
That's so good.
I love that music they play. Each time she starts scheming or, you know, making up a new story, they always play that, like, that little sound bite. Yeah.
I just want to say, Kathy, I would do anything that you asked. Based on 100%. This character, I was so hooked on this.
So it is Steve. Steve was right there for you, too.
Whatever you asked, I would have just said, yes, okay, let's go to Vegas
when
right
I,
now.
When I just heard you say the name Parnell, it reminded me, Chuck, that you came up with the idea of making J. Thomas Parnell or J. Parnell Thomas, whichever it was.
Right.
You know, giving that name to the celebrity tour guy at the very end.
Uh-huh, right.
I didn't know the name, but Chuck certainly did. He was.
Was he, is that name? Who's Parnell to you? Do you know who Jay Parnell is to you, Chuck?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Chuck knows.
Oh, of course, Chuck knows. The old Chuck knows. I have no recollection, but yes, it's a good name. Yes. You know, there was a sign company because it was a sign company, Jay Parnell Thomas, that Karen had collected little things like I do. My wife Karen wrote for the show too, Kathy, and she collected little things. And one of them was something from their construction fence site, J. Parnell Thomas.
Well, you told me
in their office, and so that's the best I can come up with.
Go ahead.
You told me that J. Thomas Parnell, I may have the names backward, was the name of the chairman of the committee of the House and American Activities Committee. You know,
Yes, it was.
And so,
I love getting segregationists and fascists good billing. They should get known. We should spread their stories because they were so inspirational. Yeah, it was just so inspirational, this guy.
It was just
House of Un-American Activities. They would have liked to probably put our show in there. Brenda loses her virginity. That was about it, right?
It was just a fun inside joke, I think. It was mine. That's what I've always thought.
No, that's it. But I'm also thinking there was some sign company, too.
Okay.
Anyway, I like the bet. Yours is right, you know, but I forgot that. I did forget it.
That's amazing. Okay. The only other thing I would mention is that Steve and Dylan are really not getting along in this episode. There is some stuff about the detention.
Yeah.
And it's a very kind of like almost feels a little like when Dylan is in the class taking detention for Steve, it feels like Breakfast Club a little bit. You know what I mean? Even the jacket that sort of Dylan's wearing at that point. Writing some of that conflict, is that something that you wrote into the script, Ken, or were you told, like, we want them to have it?
Well, primarily. And, the idea of Dylan, you know, substituting for Steve in the detention room, and, you know, because there was a substitute proctor who had the... I'm not articulating it very well, but Steve had done something wrong in previous episodes, so he was in detention for it. He's in detention. He couldn't go on ditch day. And so somehow, at some point along in the day, he convinced Dylan to go sit in for him. And when the roll was called, Steve Sanders, you saw the frame, and in the bottom of the frame, a hand comes up, and you pan down from the hand, and it's Dylan saying, "Here." And so that was the genesis of that, and it got more substance to it underneath later on. I don't really recollect too much. They were struggling with each other about something during the course of the show.
Yeah, there's named Kelly Taylor.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's conflict over that. They were having a cat, their own version of a cat fight.
David Semmel's name is mentioned in the attendance when the teacher is calling attention.
Right, because he spent most of his high school years in detention. I know that to be true.
I loved that though. I love the little inside stuff that you guys do. I think fans love hearing where it comes from. Okay, I think we've covered everything about this episode. Brian, do you have any Reddit questions that you want to throw into the mixer? Have we covered them?
No, I think everything's been pretty much covered. I do want to mention somebody brought up a fan on the page said, Kathy, they loved you so much in Earth Angel. It's one of their favorite films growing up. I can't remember the username, but
Yeah.
I bet that must have been such a fun experience. I mean, you worked with so many legends on that one. I mean, Roddy McDowell, Mark Hamill, Cindy Williams, Eric Estrada. Yeah. That must have been a joy to work in.
It was amazing. It was amazing. I was a huge Laverne and Shirley fan when I was a kid. So, like, playing Cindy Williams' best friend, I was, like, fangirling out. Yeah, and everyone was, yeah, it was great. It was amazing. I just wanted to say one quick thing. You guys had mentioned Rick Gunther, who was the DP for this episode. He was also, right? He was the DP.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. He was also the DP on Dallas for the whole time I was on. So.
No, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I didn't know that because I associate him coming from MTM, right? Ken, he did that too. He did some St. Elsewhere's, I think. I think he was a St. Elsewhere guy too.
Oh. But that must have been before. He came
Yeah, probably.
Dallas. I think maybe just my last few years. Yeah.
We don't talk about Rick Gunther enough here, but we should, because one of the reasons this episode sells so well is because of what he does with the roller coaster, what he does with the bathroom, the bathroom window. I know that's Jason too, but Rick is a key player in this, Ken. Can you talk about Rick Gunther and how important he was?
I don't know that I can say anything specific to this episode. I just tell you as a man, he's he's a gentleman. He's very open to discussing something. And he was also known for shooting fast. It didn't take him and his crew long to light a set.
Did they have that where those warehouses wired, didn't they, Ken? Yeah. That was every producer's dream. They were years ahead of their time. They were a fabulous bunch of guys.
Yeah. And he every once in a while I go up to him, you know, and ask him while they were lighting, how much longer? So I can cue the actors that they got, you know, 5 minutes to get to the set or whatever. And he'd often turn to me and says, "Well, when do you want them to be ready?" I said, 5 minutes. He said, "Well, I'm ready now." So I sometimes had egg on my face because I didn't have the actors right there, you know, because he was so fast. But he was a gentleman. He was a very nice guy.
We would save half a day's. We were a 7 day show, and then we would be doing them in 6.5 days. He was so fast on our set. And part of it was that the lighting, you know, there were certain lighting cues that spelling light. But I always know that Rick would always, we would always have conversations about if there were ever scenes that, cause very rarely would I have commentary about the lighting, but sometimes I would want it a little moodier than the mister, you know, and would
maybe
want
maybe not the lighting, but the boom always being in shot. Yeah. And I know it's in this episode. I saw the boom.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I missed the boom. You didn't tell me.
Where was this one, Pete?
No, I remember seeing it in one of the scenes. I'll have to remember that. Yeah, I feel like it was in the
beach bed.
It was, or it was in the high school. I feel like, but anyway, Ken, do you? What was your thoughts when you would see the boom pole?
Or the boom light? Know, usually it's the camera operator that sees it. I'm not looking through the lens, so I mean, if you're asking if I see when I see the film later, what my thoughts are?
Yes. That's the question.
Like, oh, shit. you know, nothing I can do about it. That was the boom man's name was Robo. That was a nickname. His father was the sound mixer, and they were quite a duo. They were, I don't know how to describe them. Chuck maybe will have a better idea how to describe them, but they were.
Well, they're infamous.
To me, they just bring up. I don't know. He says their names. I have the image of them. It just is the feeling of raw meat.
Yeah.
They're they're just there. They're all in.
And well, they made their appearance.
There'd be times when we'd have a shot and I'd say something about it that was negative or something that needed to be fixed. And Blake, the sound manager of the company, said, "Don't worry about it, Ken. It's just stuff to put in between the commercials." That was sort of his cynical view about the whole business. He had been working on spelling shows since
Bertois.
What was the name? Starsky and Hutch.
Mm. Well, they made their appearance quite a bit through the years of 90210 with that boom just sticking out.
There's a joke on Reddit where they say it's something like it's the longest running character on the show, the boom mic.
That, I love that. You know.
All right, guys, this has been great. Kathy, thank you for spending time here with us. Let's do more.
Thank you for having me, guys. No,
there's just more that we have to do. I don't know what yet. We're gonna figure it out. You've been in so many shows and so many great things. There's more to talk about. So don't go away.
Anytime.
All right.
Okay, good. Anytime. And Ken, the same applies for you. We're now just getting started. Welcome to the podcast family. We have so many more episodes that we want to talk. Larry wants to talk about that one from season 4.
Just be careful, Ken. It's like a dog that gets your ankle.
They suck you back in.
He gets the ankle there. I just need to talk to you about this or this. What are you doing in the next 10 minutes? You know, I mean,
I have done that with Chuck many times.
Just be prepared. All right.
I just had to warn you. My memory would be much, much worse than it is about this one. This was my first produced script.
First one, yeah. Fun, good show. Really holds up. You know, thanks. Congratulations.
And we have these Ginger, Adrian, or whatever your name is. It's great to see you again. And
Ken, it's season 8 that we would like to talk to you about.
A little bit. Okay.
Yeah. All right. All right, guys. This has been great. Good seeing everybody.
Please say hello.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Bye,
hey,
everybody.
Chuck, you have a part for me.
I retired, but I'm doing one now.
You said. That's what I said.
That's what I said. Well, I'm just starting to do it. I will. You, no, no.
Can I just say, Kathy, this is very Ginger vibes, what you just did.
I love it.
No, I saw that. No, stop the running, Petey. Petey.
Okay. Petey. Goodbye, everybody. This has been great.
But let me just talk.
Feel off, tired, moody? You might be missing minerals because 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps support energy, mood, and immunity from the inside out. Go to tracemineral.com and feel the difference minerals make.